Hey everybody, welcome to the Prep Life podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Inger, today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey guys, this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
So these are the common nutritional coaching mistakes, or I guess recommendations that tend to backfire that we're going to go over today. And I thought that this was really relevant to our current timing with, they say that so many people drop off by now for New Year's resolutions. I know I've seen the effects of that at the gym. I feel like people kind of go strong for a couple of weeks, and now, and you know, the beginning of February is kind of the time where people drop off. So I think that these are typically some of the ones that we're going to go over are some of the things that people try when it's fresh in the new year, and then they end up, like the title of this is, backfiring on us. So we're going to kind of show ways that you can still use that same type of principle, but maybe manipulate it into a way that actually works. So, but before we get started on that, why don't you tell us about your last 7 days, Chris?
Last 7 days. So I have just been finishing up with my clients in the January Bikini Challenge with Glam Girl Bikini. So we're in our last stretch, and I'm seeing some really great results. So I'm really excited to see what the other athletes, their progress when we do our final check-in on the 31st. But I've really been focused on work mostly. I've been, you know, continuing to train with less pain in my shoulder and neck, so that's been really exciting as well. And we are getting ready to go to a competition for my boyfriend TC this weekend. He's competing in his first powerlifting meet of the year, so we are busy but all good here. How about you, Amy?
That's super exciting. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. He's out in the barn right now doing his, like, I don't, it's, there's all powerlifting terms, but he's out there blasting music working. So he'll be ready on Saturday.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. I've just been, you know, taking in a bunch of different applications or registrations for the retreat that we have going on in Phoenix, Arizona on the 19th and 20th. So I've been super excited to see so many people register, and this Saturday marks the end of the early bird pricing. So if you are interested in going to the retreat with Celestrine's Turk and her mindset training, along with all of our fabulous Glam Girl coaches doing HIIT workouts, upper body, lower body, posing, all of the things competition related. So if you want to join us in Phoenix, Arizona at the resort there, at, it's the Arizona Grand, and the early bird pricing, it ends on Saturday, so get your registrations in early here so that you don't have to pay that extra $50. If you are a member, it's $200. So if you are part of Build More Than Just a Body or Glam Girls, a $200 charge, and then if you are a non-member, which we've had a lot of non-members sign up, which I've been excited to see and meet those people, it's $250, so it adds on another $50 if you don't sign up by Saturday. Other than that, I just posted our new ebook on our website.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, we've had a purchase already, just since putting it up there yesterday. So it's $30 for non-glam girl clients if you want to purchase that. It's a 9-week guide for posing and handbook for this season's, what they're kind of looking for and things like that. And then it is a complimentary piece of the Glam Girl experience. So all of our athletes get that e-posing book for free. So,
which you did a really good job on. It's laid out really nicely. I think so many people get lost when it comes to posing, and we just like lean on videos that we're seeing or other athletes. But this is like great. If you want to be polished on stage and have like insight into like some methodical steps on how to prepare your posing, I think this is really good. Plus, like, I don't know, there's other like tips and tidbits and like self-care and recovery to benefit your posing as well too. So highly, highly valuable. And I'm really excited to get to start working with that with my clients.
Thanks. Yeah, I feel like when I started, there was nothing out there, and I do feel like it changes every year. And even when I try to like Google to see if people had information out there, there really isn't a ton of just an instruction guide on how to pose. And I try to use the Olympians and the professional athletes, such as the dark unicorn herself, Chris Nicole, as my fabulous examples. So it's very user friendly, and it gives you a lot of tips on just traveling for the show, what you need to pack, what you need to have on show day. So it's also pretty practical. I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything, but it's something that I know that if I would have been starting and I could purchase that for $30, I probably would have definitely been the first person in line, just because there's not a whole bunch out there when it
No, I
comes to that.
agree. Yeah, and a lot of times when I talk to other athletes, a lot of times that are coached by males, not to knock on the males, but the posing and the travel and all those like little tips are the things that sometimes don't get covered. So I love this book. I think it'll I'm gonna recommend it to my friends too. I think it'll be really beneficial.
Thanks. So, all right, let's get started with these tips that can sometimes backfire and try to give you some strategies on how, if you've ever tried to implement one of these nutritional strategies, how to spin it so that it's a positive, so that it actually helps you and it brings some of the guesswork out of, ways to address your plan, your health goals. And, everybody's busy and it's hard when hiccups in life, occur and arise, it can tend to kind of lead us astray. So we'll start with the first one. And I think this one's really common. And especially when we were both first competing, this is something that we did. And the advice would be follow this recommended meal plan. And I've done every extreme of a meal plan from, four raspberries, counting them out, or just like very specific foods to a meal exchange and macro counting. And I think all of that's an evolution, but I think that when somebody just gives you a meal plan and says, follow this, it is straightforward, it's very precise, and it's pretty foolproof. But I mean, how many times does it actually work that you can just keep doing that? I mean, there was a reason why both of us had, I had a packet that was 12 weeks, like follow this plan, because you can't just keep eating white fish and asparagus and be good. What are your thoughts there with that one?
Yeah, so I think meal plans have the benefit of you know exactly what the client is eating. You know that if, as long as they're measuring their food and they're sticking to a meal plan, it's very controlled. So that's nice, but that's like, I think it's beneficial if you have people that are they're just systematic, but the longevity for an athlete, I don't think fits great for a meal plan because what happens after the show, or what happens if you run out of a food item? Like, I remember my first meal plan. I was living with my parents, and my mom's like, I'll pick up some groceries for you. So I wrote her out a list, and she said, is it okay if I just buy carrots, or do they need to be shredded? And it said shredded carrots on my meal plan. I was like, no, mom, it needs to be shredded carrots. So, like, there's the mental health of like being able to understand your nutrition and sub things in when you need to. Like if you run out of chicken, you know how to replace it with white fish, or you're out at a family function or a social event and you know how to make exchanges. I'm just like a big proponent on being educated about your nutrition because I want people to be able to function outside of like really strict parameters, just to have like, I don't know, to enjoy your life a little bit. So I think there's a time and a place. Some people really just want like clear-cut direction, but I just caution in knowing how to transition out of that. So,
Yeah, and
yeah.
I think we kind of, I mean, again, after doing this for over 10 years, I kind of realized like where a sweet spot is in terms of trying to educate people on nutrient timing. Like, you know, what food sources do you need pre-workout? What do you need post-workout? We need
Yes.
some guideline, and then we also need to know like optimal food. So what's going to be the best for our digestion? What is going to be the best food for giving us optimal energy and recovery? So those are all important, and that's why we do meal exchange. So we do, you know, several, you know, if it's a lean protein, there's several examples. But then we always have the macro budget at the bottom too, so that, like you said, if life comes up, you need to swap something out, you run out of this grocery or that, it's very easy if you understand why you're doing stuff. So I think that, you know, follow this recommended meal plan could totally work for you as long as it's in the right context.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. I do like the meal exchange because it almost simulates a meal plan where it's very like you people have the skeleton of knowing like, okay, my meals should really consist of like a protein at every meal and like how to time out your pre and post workout nutrients. But also like not, but it's, it has the exchange quality where you're helping minimize stress for that client. So that if they come into like that situation where they, I don't have this food, they at least have some other options to fall back on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that with the meal plan idea, I think, you know, sometimes we're very educated on food and we, you know, if I have a client that comes in that's been doing macros strictly for the entire time before they met me, I find that once I start looking into their food diaries, they're using their carb budget for all carbs and no vegetables. So
yes.
When I put a meal plan, you know, I'm putting 3 to 4 servings of vegetables. And a lot of times people will skirt around that. So we do put a fiber goal in there, yes, but you can get fiber from, I mean, you can get a lot of fiber from just like a Quest bar, and that's not the right kind of fiber. So
exactly.
There's just pluses and minuses to everything, but I think just finding that balance is the key thing. So
exactly. Education, I think, is key there.
Okay, so number two, you need to give up XYZ, fill in the blank. So a lot of times diets or nutritional advice will be like, okay, give up white colored foods or give up things that such as gluten, dairy, inflammatory processed foods, you know the list, right? And for competitors, there's a fine line here too with when it comes to achieving a certain look with inflammation and how your waistline looks. There are some things that we have to give up as competitors. So
yes.
Can you explain how this could work in that situation?
Do you mean like when they are in improvement season or they're dieting or either?
Either, yeah.
Okay. So I think for, you know, for dieting purposes, since you were talking about like giving up inflammatory foods, I think it's really good to try and replace certain things that, you know, say gluten, because you're eating bread, right? So gluten is known to be very inflammatory for our systems. Replacing it with a substitute that may not have gluten in it. So I actually like find a pretty easy swap with rice cakes. Like if you're having a piece of toast with peanut butter on it or avocado, I think a rice cake is pretty simple and it has minimal ingredients and you can do a swap there. So you're still getting like the crunch, the getting carbohydrate, and actually typically you can have 2 rice cakes for a piece of bread. So I always try to look at the glass half full. So now I'm getting 2 pieces of something. And then I think with the improvement season, I think it's just good to keep in check some of those foods that, you know, we may not be as dialed in, focused on a show. So like, you know, we can incorporate some dairy, we can incorporate some sweets in moderation, but making sure that they are, they're not going overboard. So like, I know some people say, well, if you're really serious about competing, like you'll never eat sugar again. And I think we're also human beings too. So it's finding like a happy medium of when we need to substitute certain foods to get a certain look. And then when we can, you know, enjoy some, some foods that are quote unquote inflammatory, but we're also like still focused on our goal. So I know for me, for example, like I got pretty lax with my diet last year and was eating ice cream on a regular basis and wondering why I was waking up like so fatigued. My workouts weren't great, but I had gotten in the habit of having ice cream every night. And so knowing that like that influx of sugar, one wasn't great for my blood sugars and I just wasn't feeling great, I needed to substitute it for something else. And so now in my improvement season, I really enjoy like a small piece of dark chocolate that's individually wrapped, so I'm not tempted to eat like a whole chocolate bar. And I'll sit down after dinner and have some tea with it. So it's like the experience of sitting down, having something warm, tasting the chocolate. I take my time eating it. So I've kind of like in the improvement season swapped out something that was like inflammatory food that wasn't healthy for something that's a little bit more beneficial towards my goals.
Yeah, and I think just doing that mentality of swapping things for a lesser evil too can really work. So, I mean, I have a vice where I like a latte, at Starbucks. And so I have a frother at my house where I just use unsweetened almond milk and I froth it that way. And I do that with coffee or decaf, and it's a really sweet treat. I sprinkle stevia and salt on the top of it. And it's literally a frou-frou coffee for like 30 calories at
That's
most,
nice.
Or I really enjoy ice cream. I just like the texture of it. So I enjoy making my level one peppermint bark right now. It reminds me of the Edie's candy cane ice cream, around the holidays. And so I'll put some chocolate stevia with some Himalayan salt, unsweetened almond milk, and the level one. And blend that up, and it's protein ice cream, and it's 170 calories. So, with basically no added sugars at all, plus a really hearty serving of protein. So, for me, I just have to substitute, and I think that experimenting with that, like you said, the mindset, first of all, is I'm choosing not to in order to learn what works best for me, and then maybe just focusing on. If you're trying to give up diet soda, releasing that attachment and maybe just thinking of something that you can focus on instead. So maybe it's that you just need to kind of focus on your water goal and it might help you, naturally spend less energy and focusing on drinking the or not drinking the Coke or whatever it is that you are addicted to. Same thing can go with just like caffeine if you're trying to eliminate it. I mean, don't give up that habit of having like a warm beverage. Get some of the crazy cups that are amazing flavors that I get on Amazon. I love them. They're like desserts and they're zero calories, but it's a sweet treat for me to have a decaf coffee. And they're, if I want to give up caffeine, then that's just like a substitute. Try to think of ways that you can swap things out. I mean, you could, the possibilities are endless. Like if you're a big pasta lover, maybe you need to do spaghetti squash or zoodles, something along those lines. So, just some thoughts.
Those are all really good recommendations. And I think you're right about thinking about the experience of it. And I do know the more that, there have been foods that that I'm just regularly inflammatory to, like gluten. It just always comes up really high on tests that I take. So I just avoid it in general. And when I first had to remove it, it was like, I remember crying in the grocery store, like, there's nothing that I can eat. But by being consistent with not having certain things in my diet and swapping them out for other things I enjoy, like you said, now it's like second nature and I don't think about it. So it can be a little bit of like a bumpy road in the beginning, but knowing that you're treating yourself with the swap, I think is a really good mindset in making it an even exchange.
Yeah, I've often heard clients when they get like a food sensitivity test back or something along those lines, there's a bit of a grieving process. And I think it's just a lot of it's mental, but it can go, that transition period can go a lot quicker if you just find a substitute for that same habit or that same type of texture. So if you're giving up sugar, you know, there's going to be a detox process where you're really craving it. But if you can really make a wide variety of foods that have like really rich seasonings and spices, and for me, sweet potatoes taste really sweet, and I sprinkle a little stevia on them, or you know, maybe you get your sugar fixed through some fruit or something along those lines that at least has some fiber and you know it's a naturally occurring sugar. Okay, number three. Do you want to take that one?
Sure. So the recommendation is eat frequent small meals and snacks throughout the day. So I think this has been a trend for a while where I remember hearing you need to eat every couple hours to save your muscle tissue and keep your metabolism burning. You have to keep throwing fire or wood into the fire to keep it going. That's just not necessarily true. And I think the bigger factor is your overall caloric intake, not necessarily small meals every day. And I think the most important thing about food timing is like kind of what we mentioned earlier is the pre and post workout. So if you are a person that like just based off of your schedule, you can only eat four meals a day because you're crazy busy, you have a lot on your plate. Then that is how your meals should be set up. If you're someone who, like myself, I just have more fluctuations within blood sugar, I need to make sure that I'm eating 5 to 6 meals just to keep my energy high and to keep my health in order, then that works for me. So I think there's no magic number. It's just a matter of, like we said, sticking with your total macros and your calories, keeping things in check there, and then finding your meal timing that works most appropriately for you.
Yeah, if it's causing you more stress to, and you're constantly thinking about, you know, when's my next meal and you're super food focused, sometimes what I'll do is I'll combine, you know, some meals together and eat a lot more calories. Like, for example, I eat a lot more calories at night because my last meal, I know that I start my fasting window at around 4:30, and I want to, at night, that's when I'm really triggered to want to eat snacks and go all out. So if I'm super full, it just helps me. So, you know, depending on your schedule, what you've got going on, what works with your life and your family, I think it's important to know that the total protein for the day is really what's important. Aside from, you know, having protein pre and post workout, that's really the only time that you really need to worry about having a time focused meal. I think studies have shown that if you have one meal versus 13, there's really not a difference in fat loss and things like that. So it's what works for you. So that's how that recommendation could work for you as well. And then number four is drink a lot of water before your meals to manage your appetite. So the reason why this doesn't work is that, and I think we talked about this when we talked about digestion, is you can actually drink too much water at mealtime and it can dilute important digestive enzymes in your digestive tract. And so you're not going to be able to properly break down the food. So, yes, hydration does mask itself as hunger. So if you are dehydrated, you can actually feel like you need food, but it's actually you just need water. So maybe try to hydrate throughout the process of not just right before a meal or things of that nature. So what are some other ways that you think that it could be helpful that in that recommendation example?
Yes, so I think sometimes we think to only drink at meals because we're stopping. And I think, we always pair some liquids with some food when we're sitting down to have breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So I think that my biggest thing is making sure that I'm getting ahead of my water intake early enough in the day so that I'm not drinking a lot at meals or not drinking a lot at night and disrupting my sleep. So I think, one glass of water to me would be appropriate at a meal, but then making sure that the rest of your time, especially between meals, if you're getting a little bit hungry, that's a great chance to like have a big water bottle with you and to keep drinking on it. And To me, it just becomes, again, another habit. Like the more you practice it, have it with you so that it's accessible, the better you'll be able to like hydrate yourself in between those meal times.
Yes, great. Number five is consume everything in moderation. So I feel like this one is, a recommendation that comes along the lines with nutrition, but it just doesn't really play out very well in real life, in terms of that. So, especially because there are certain foods that trigger people, and they're usually the highly palatable. So it's very difficult to just have something that's highly palatable in a small amount and to stop there. At least the fat kid inside me, that's what she's saying.
No, I feel you. Yes.
just being real. So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's all about what you need to know yourself. You need to know what things trigger you, what foods you have to put barriers on. So when I say barriers, I mean legit, like not having it in the house, like having the barrier of having to go out and purchase it. Like you were saying with the Dove chocolate squares, I've recommended to my clients to also freeze them so it takes longer to eat them and so they slow down. There's just certain things that I think it's hard to overeat, like a big voluminous salad, right? I mean, you feel super full because it takes you a long time to chew it. It has a lot of fiber, especially obviously if you're having some protein with it and a fat, that's gonna trigger your fullness signal quicker. So it's a hard dance. What would you say would be a recommendation on how this could work, though?
So I think that, let me think here. So I do think that if you are able to, I know sometimes they say like completely removing the food, giving yourself like a little bit of a break and being able to just live without that, that food trigger initially is difficult, but after a while it's empowering because you are not craving that and wanting that so much. So I don't know. I'm on the fence here, and I think it's very person dependent. I think food, like triggers are something very strong and powerful, and also it's very dependent on where you're at in your prep journey as well. Like things are going to be a little bit more intense coming out of a show, or you know, when you're super lean. So knowing you and what you can handle, I always say if it's not really benefiting you or adding value to your life, then you know, or it's making you feel upset because you're over consuming it and then you're feeling bad about yourself, like maybe it's not worth having in the house or not worth trying to consume in moderation. But I think the bigger issue here is like if you have poor food relationships and like you find yourself over consuming foods on a regular basis, just important to like look at those behaviors and then seek out some professional help that can, you know, give you some a skill set or help you manage and understand what's going on. So again, it's person dependent. It's like a sticky situation, but I do think learning what your triggers are and then just empowering yourself with, you know, putting yourself in positive situations is kind of the way to go.
Yeah, and I think a good way to set yourself up is to, I think I've mentioned this before, that I eat my meals in courses and I eat my least favorite food first. And it's usually like my vegetables and maybe my protein source. And so those are going to, it takes about 20 minutes to feel full. So I'm chewing my food, I'm eating the things that I like least. And then I'll have like my carbohydrate and I'll eat that really slowly. And then I'll have my little peanut butter cup at the very end. So by the time I get to that, it's been probably 20 minutes. So aside from the fact that it's also a frozen peanut butter, all of these things, that process of eating and sitting down, slowing down, and allowing for our bodies to recognize that we are full and we've given ourselves fiber and things, it's probably easier to have that piece of chocolate at the end of a meal like that versus when you're absolutely hungry. You're super tired. you're extremely
Yes.
stressed out, that's when things arise. That so just being aware of stress management, sleep behaviors, all of those things lead up to good or bad decisions in the reality of it. And so if you can kind of front load yourself with the things that are going to get you full first, then it's okay to have that. And I think it's good exposure therapy to have something you enjoy every day so that it doesn't have that bad boy mentality. So if you were to not have that little chocolate square at the end of your meal, like as your dessert, you probably would crave it more and be more likely to overindulge because, you know, when your chains are off or when the diet's failed and it's like, okay, well, now I need to eat all this chocolate because it was off limits to me before. So I think, I mean, that's kind of what I take from that one.
Another tip that's been really helpful for me. Oh my gosh. So I don't have the greatest cooking skills. I'm just very like, it needs to be like edible, like warm, heated up, like, and then I'll just like consume it. So the art of like cooking is not in my skill set. But I do notice when I have food that is prepared, and is more satisfying, I'm less likely to crave those other trigger foods. So thankfully, I have someone in my life that like likes cooking, like you, Amy. I got one of yours. I got Amy's husband, and that has helped a lot too, because I'm sitting down to dinner and I'm actually really enjoying what I'm eating, and it's not making me just look for the next thing that's going to be satisfying.
Yeah, and I think what it comes down to is just, you know, setting yourself up with appropriate coaching that's going to support your long-term success because everyone is a unicorn, everyone's individual. No one has their, everybody has their quirks about them and how they like to eat, what things work for them with their schedule. Everybody has a different lifestyle and things like that. So it's important as a coach to find, you know, where you can meet that person where they're at and what you can have them do for the long-term success. So, you know, whether it is a meal plan or if it's strictly macros, whatever that may be, what's your secret sauce? I think it's different for everybody, and coaches need to listen to your feedback. They need to partner with you and come up with an approach that's going to be, you know, you're going to be able to maintain in the long run. And I think that that's the key to success, full coaching, really. I mean, if getting great results is by finding what a client can do consistently, is what I found.
I think that is well said, and that sums us up perfectly.
Okay, well, that wraps things up. So I will be putting the retreat link in the show notes. If you want to go ahead and register for that, we'd love to meet you in Phoenix. And I will also put the new ebook link if you would like to purchase that. If you would like to sign up for the team, we will have that link as well. And you can go to glamgirlbikini.com and hit the Get Started button to apply. You can also find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini. And this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.